This week on Making Contact.
We're fighting to have our voices heard. We're fighting to be able to speak to our people. We're fighting to be able to put out something different than what's being put out there right now.
If these stewards of public resources, the FCC, are not doing their job, then there's very serious impacts, as it would be if the Forest Service or the National Park Service weren't doing their job. You know, if they were basically asleep at the wheel and allowing, you know, Chevron and Mobil to come in and drill in these parks, then this would be a real problem as far as serving the public interest.
On this edition, we take a look at how media giant Clear Channel came to be the largest owner of radio stations in North America and the many people fighting against it. I'm Tina Rubio.
And I'm Emily Polk, a joint fellow with National Radio Project and Media Alliance.
We're your hosts this week on Making Contact, a program creating connections between people, vital ideas, and important information. On a cold and misty day in San Francisco, more than 100 people, mostly young adults of color, gathered in front of Clear Channel's headquarters. Chanting, rapping, and speaking, their message was loud and clear. Give us back our airwaves. They're part of the Unplug Clear Channel campaign, a diverse coalition of social justice and media activists in the Bay Area, angry about what they say the media giant has done to their airwaves. From radio shock jocks like Michael Savage to the lack of local content and artists on their hip-hop stations like KMEL and K-Wild, the list of their Clear Channel grievances runs long. The coalition, one of many working to challenge Clear Channel around the country, just filed 4 legal petitions with the FCC to revoke Clear Channel's radio licenses. They say Clear Channel is biased and its lack of local content doesn't serve the community's best interest, mandatory FCC criteria for legally operating a radio station. At the time this was produced, Clear Channel had not yet responded.
The Youth Media Council helped to spearhead the campaign. YMC, a Bay Area nonprofit, is one of the nation's leading grassroots youth organizations working to train young people to be leaders in the media justice movement. Malkia Cyril is the Youth Media Council's executive director. This is Malkia speaking passionately through a megaphone at the rally.
It's something that we're willing to fight for. It's not an abstract concept, that something that's off in the distance. It's a bread and butter issue. It matters. It defines whether or not we get food. It defines whether or not we get housing. It defines whether or not our people go to jail. Our radio stations and our airwaves need to be used to promote justice, not to promote war and to promote racism.
The campaign's main goals? Reinstate a community affairs director at each station, something that Clear Channel did away with when they bought the stations. Stop the stations from using language they say incites violence against communities of color, women, Muslims, and the LGBT community. They also want the stations to make their playlists and news at least 50% local. YMC Media Justice Advocate, 25-year-old Taishi Duchisella.
It was through an effort of people of color being very frustrated, young people being very frustrated, not having any local communities affairs programming that was relevant to them and that would actually give them both sides of the issue and allow them to make a decision. There wasn't any local artists being put on. It's just kind of an example of how Clear Channel has automated the playlists of hip-hop nationally, you know what I mean? So it's like they're in a position now to define what hip-hop is and who listens to what, and then also not having any access or any clear venue for us to hold them accountable to our communities is also a problem. So that's why we took on working on this campaign and partnering with Media Alliance, partnering with Code Pink, partnering with La Peña, with YMR, Youth Movement Records, and Eastside Arts Alliance and Acción Latina, because we all have different branches from the same tree trying to like really hold down like corporate media and hold them accountable to give us the right information, to not spew hate radio, to have local representative programming.
Taishi says they've tried to speak to Clear Channel, but haven't had much luck.
Oh, we have tried to speak to them a lot of times. They're not interested in what this campaign is about. Like I said, they want everything. They want to have meetings on their terms, or it's just a no comment type thing.
YMC says it's crucial for young adults to have a leadership role in the campaign. That's why it hired 8 young people to work exclusively on it. These 18 and 22-year-olds belong to the Si Se Puede Fellowship, a group for young leaders to develop themselves as media justice activists.
Within the media reform movement, not only are people of color perspectives kind of absent, but youth as well. And it's important to have in media accountability campaigns a youth component, just because it's us that are being impacted. And to have them to be able to be part of the actual kind of strategy, the design of the actions, to be media spokespeople for this campaign, and to be able to do the base building and the outreach for the campaign was something tremendous and something not seen in any kind of media reform movement at all. You know, it's them taking back the control of what has been taken away from all of us, you know, or, you know what I mean, that we never really had.
22-year-old Leslie Ruiz is one of YMC's fellows. Among the many things she did, Leslie also helped collect more than 1,700 postcards signed by community members in support of the campaign.
For me, there were so many reasons why this campaign was so important. It really felt like the Battle of David and Goliath, where just Clear Channel is such a huge corporation, but it's so important that young people in particular feel that they have the tools and that they have the right to fight these corporations, despite how large they are, despite how much power and how much political clout that they have and political connections and money. It's a fight for our future. I've always felt like it's a fight for our right to communicate, our right for the upliftments of our communities. We're never going to be able to get organized if we don't have the access to methods of communication. And radio is just something that everybody has access to. And in organizing young people and in dealing with the issue of our local hip hop stations being owned by this corporate giant, a lot of people don't even know that what we're listening to, it feels like it's our music, but in reality, it's being controlled by these corporate giants that have an alternative agenda that is not serving our communities, but in reality is supporting things like the war, and is supporting things like the prison industrial complex, is supporting poor education and miseducation about ourselves. Our generation is under attack.
And Leslie says it hasn't been easy.
In dealing with Clear Channel, I think they really just saw us as a bunch of rowdy young people. We have gone into the Clear Channel offices to try to look at the public comments and such, and it's just low levels of respect, just really just treating us like we're a nuisance. We had to set up an appointment, and they didn't have anything set up for us. We had to wait about an hour for them to get their computers up and running and their programs running, and it's supposed to be something that's accessible to us, and it just did not feel like we were welcomed. These are some corporate headquarters, and they kind of knew that we weren't there in support of them, and I just felt like they didn't see us as a credible group. So, and I do feel like that has to do with our age and our race.
Leslie was one of the leaders of the rallies at Clear Channel's headquarters. She explains what it was like to hold the megaphone.
It's powerful to feel like your voice is being heard, and like people are actually invested in what you have to say. I feel like that's what we're fighting for. Like that megaphone kind of represents the access that we're fighting for. We're fighting to have our voices heard. We're fighting to be able to speak to our people. We're fighting to be able to put out something different than what's being put out there right now. Sitting on my couch, just flipping through the TV, seeing in the Fox News theme, so deceiving. Not reality, but in a realistic setting. Program my mind, wipe my forehead, I'm sweating. How can we believe what they want us to believe?
We'll have more in a few moments. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information, or for a cassette or CD copy of this program, call 800-529-5736. You can also download programs or get our podcast at radioproject.org. Synthetic, genetic, command your soul. Devil got a lasso, now we got a hole. You don't want to wrestle, do what you was told. I can't live impressed because it made me get stressed. I'm feeling restless,
and I guess I could just bomb the living daylights out of them.
You could abort every black baby in this country, and your crime rate would go down.
Execute him, hang him from a lamppost, gut him like Mussolini. We are being overrun, we've been invaded. It is pre-tail fin time to build the bomb shelters all over again. The illegals are now an army invading America. You want to pinch a girl on the butt? Fine, pinch her on the butt over the water cooler. The Krapistan group wants their oil wells up there. The turds wanted in Turdistan. I never saw anything like this. I'd like to put you in an internment camp. I'd like to put you behind barbed wire. I want you to sleep a little less well tonight if you're a leftist. I want you to worry tonight and sweat. I want you to smoke a little more dope. I want you to go out and get a little more drug. I want you to take more risky sexual acts because you realize that the right hates your guts and doesn't want you to undermine this country anymore. I want you to worry that the day is coming that you're going to have to pay the piper for what you did to this country.
Those are the hosts of Clear Channel's KNEW 910 AM, conservative talk radio in the Bay Area. The last voice was shock jock Michael Savage. Clear Channel hired Savage after he was fired from MSNBC. The network says he was fired for telling a gay man on the air that he should, quote, get AIDS and die.
Members of Media Alliance, a resource and training center for media activists, conducted a three-week monitoring campaign of KNEW. It says its findings prove the station is not operating in the public's best interests, something it must do if it's going to keep its license.
Media Alliance says the campaign is not about challenging free speech rights. It's about holding broadcasters accountable to the communities they serve. I sat down with Media Alliance Executive Director Jeff Perlstein to find out just how the Texas-based company became so powerful and about the long ties between Clear Channel CEO Larry Mays and the Bush family.
It's important for us to really look at how Clear Channel came to own so many radio stations because in a lot of ways, it's kind of the canary in the coal mine for media ownership and media ownership rule changes that we'll be looking at in 2006 throughout and beyond. It really stems from some rule changes, policy changes that happened in 1996 with the Telecommunications Act. What's really important to understand is that up until that point, no company, no matter how big or how powerful, was able to own more than 40 radio stations. There was a limit that was set on national ownership. And the 96 Act did away with that ceiling, removed it completely and said there's no limit. Now the sky's the limit on how many radio stations you can own nationally. And so Clear Channel then had the opportunity to bulk up from their 40 station max to as big as they thought they could go. They see these as just another market, just as another opportunity to make a buck. And they've been incredibly aggressive in how they've gone about that, have broken numerous laws, have behaved in a very anti-competitive, monopolistic fashion, and have largely gotten away with it.
You mentioned earlier their connection with the Bush administration. Right. Maybe you can speak to that a little bit.
So Clear Channel, at many levels, is well connected to the Republican Party's machine, and specifically with the Bush family. Lowry Mays has been a very staunch supporter of the Republican Party, even to the point of having a very high-profile multi-million-dollar fundraiser at his home featuring Rush Limbaugh last fall, right before the presidential election. And this runs pretty deep. I mean, they're both from Texas. Their families go way back as far as a relationship in Texas.
Now, one thing that's unique about this campaign is just the number of different organizations working together. What unique facets could you each bring?
Well, I think this has been a really unique campaign and unique collaboration. And in some ways, I think it really speaks to the breadth of people who are impacted by Clear Channel's bad policies, that their targeting of communities of color, of queer folks, of progressives, liberals. So many people in this country are negatively impacted by the ideology they're putting out, and not just the ideology, the actual information, messages, and ways that that's changing people's thinking. So the ways that those different sectors of the community came together was really dynamic in this particular campaign. For example, the folks who were the media activists were able to identify what are some of the policy openings, some of the windows, to even say, oh, there's a license renewal coming up, let's pay attention to this moment. Folks who are involved in racial and economic justice were able to bring this message to people who may not necessarily have always made the connection between the public policy, racial injustice they're facing, and how that's related to media messages that are going out there and fostering these policies. The artists, a lot of times, were able to bring a dynamism, a creativity, and a celebratory aspect to all of this that oftentimes is lacking in many of the rallies that we see amongst people who care about these issues.
And what has the response from Clear Channel been?
The campaign has had some interaction response with employees at Clear Channel, mostly lower level employees who are responding to some of our demands after repeated requests with very timid, I would say, or modest offers of how to engage the coalition's demands. So for example, one response was, yes, we will meet with you, the lone representative from the Youth Media Council, for example, but you can't bring anybody else to the conversation. And that is unacceptable to us because we're part of a larger coalition and there's lots of people who need to be part of this conversation.
I think a question that some people ask is, what if Clear Channel, or can Clear Channel respond to these issues by saying, look, our shows have high ratings, they have lots of listeners, that's why we're not changing anything. These are the most popular shows. How would you respond to that?
We believe that by having this programming on the air that is inciting to people to violence, largely inciting people to violence against communities of color and LGBT communities, that this is a violation of their contract with the American public and that the FCC needs to do something about that. So, you know, on some level, if they believe that this gets them higher ratings and that they're willing to chance the higher ratings and the profits that they're getting from those and violate this contract, then that's a business decision that they're making. That's a corporate policy decision that they're making. But that the governmental bodies have a responsibility to then call them to the carpet on the fact that they are not serving the public interest.
You bring up a good point. This is largely a campaign and a movement and action to hold Clear Channel accountable. What is the FCC's role in that?
So the FCC is the government body that is specifically tasked with stewardship of the public airwaves, these precious, valuable public resources that are owned by all of us, that needs to be monitored. Someone needs to be keeping an eye on the store. And that's the job of the FCC, in a similar way that it's the job of the National Forest Service to keep an eye on how things are going in the forests, which are owned in the national parks, which are owned by all of us, the public. If these stewards of public resources, the FCC, are not doing their job, then there's very serious impacts, as there would be if the Forest Service or the National Park Service weren't doing their job. You know, if they were basically asleep at the wheel and allowing, you know, Chevron and Mobil to come in and drill in these parks, then this would be a real problem as far as serving the public interest. And in a similar way, that's what happens when the FCC doesn't do its job. There's all sorts of damages that happen on a regular basis.
Now, Media Alliance filed a legal challenge against four Bay Area radio stations, but all over the country, I know there are different groups working on different sort of anti-Clear Channel projects. Can you speak about some of those?
There's a tremendous growth of attention and action by local communities around the country related to holding their local media outlets accountable. And we're especially seeing a lot of activity and concern around the impact of radio stations on local communities, largely because at this point in time, a lot of organizers and community members feel that radio is one of the few spaces where there actually has been some access over the last couple of years. That the TV is pretty much locked up and people are locked out. Major newspapers the same way.
We've spoken mostly about radio, but I'm just wondering if quickly we could just discuss other things at Clear Channel has kind of control over.
Clear Channel, beyond being the dominant player in radio in the United States, also is the largest owner of billboards and outdoor advertising, and also has the uber majority control of live concert venues in the country. And this is really problematic. They're problematic in and of themselves, but when you aggregate them together, it's not just an additive effect, this problem, as far as their dominant ownership. It's actually kind of a multiplicative, right? Because what they do is they use each of these areas, with the radio, the billboards, and the venues, to cross-promote in a way that really locks out competitors in any one area and across all three areas. And this is part of their mode of operating, which has really destroyed, in a lot of ways, independent concert promoters, for example. It's really been devastating to independent record labels. And likewise, I would presume it's been devastating to if there were independent billboard owners out there. But the area we've seen the most devastating impact is in how this has really affected the music industry and affected independent artists and independent promoters.
And people who are listening to this and want to do something, take action, what can they do?
One of the most important things that people can do is tune into these stations, but tune into them strategically. So if you're really interested, if we're really interested in holding these stations accountable, or you know, any institution accountable, it's really important for us to kind of do our homework, to really kind of gather the data to make our arguments as compelling and accurate and powerful as possible to bodies like the FCC, to elected officials, but also to our neighbors, also to the local media. Because when you have specific examples that you've got in your hand from listening, documenting, taking notes, then you can really make a very clear statement. You can say, on Thursday, you know, at 3 p.m., Michael Savage said X, Y, and Z. And that really is something we found to be especially important and powerful to building a broad coalition. This is really about the power and the power resources that these institutions have to essentially ignore the public interest and impose a certain conservative political agenda. So it's crucial for us to figure out how we exercise our power together. So we definitely should cover all our bases in making sure that the elected officials and regulatory bodies are doing their job. But these stations are most responsive when they're concerned about the strength of local coalitions. And that's what's crucial. I mean, that's community organizing, and that's what's exciting and powerful about what we're seeing happening around the country now.
That was Media Alliance Executive Director Jeff Perlstein. We'll be right back. You're listening to Making Contact.
In true David and Goliath fashion, a small community center in the heart of Texas is taking on mega media giant Clear Channel. It's known as the Esperanza Peace and Justice Center. Both call San Antonio their home, but their agendas couldn't be more different. Recently, Esperanza has been in the media spotlight.
That's because the Latino community group is trying to wrest control of the public airwaves that they say are being used as a weapon of attack on marginalized communities. Making Contact's Grace Turner has this story.
In San Antonio, Texas, a rowdy group of reformers are challenging Clear Channel's conservative and, in some cases, racist messages by working towards social, political, and environmental justice in the media conglomerate's own backyard. Members of the Esperanza Center, a community center for poor and working-class Latinos in the San Antonio area, have been fighting the local conservative Clear Channel station, WOAI, for the past 6 months. San Antonio is diverse, yet Esperanza says the city's elite are almost totally conservative-minded white men. The Peace and Justice Center represents the voice of 60% of Mexican and Mexican Americans who live in the community. It's the most vocal opponent of racism, sexism, and homophobia. Graciela Sanchez is the director of the Peace and Justice Center. She says Clear Channel used its radio station and website to demonize Esperanza.
The culture of the city is based on violence. Violence against us because we're brown, because we're black, because we're women, because we're queer. And so how do we change that? Is on the one hand, you know, we change the culture and who perpetuates a lot of the stereotypes around sexist, racist images, and that is radio, and that is TV, and that is newspapers. So the Esperanza has worked throughout the last 19 years to challenge those stereotypes.
Esperanza members say they've had to respond to threats from Clear Channel listeners after the station targeted the group on air for its supposed assault on conservatives. Several angry phone calls from Clear Channel listeners were followed by a threatening visit from one man.
We had a man who we didn't know, you know, harass us. You know, we received about 5 or 6 phone calls, and then before we knew it, 20 minutes later, he was inside the building and screaming at people. And we had, you know, several high school queer young Latina lesbians where we were working with them through our youth queer youth program. And he was basically screaming homophobic language.
Sanchez also says the man verbally threatened a gay board member and told him to watch his back in the streets. Deanne Quilar, Project Director for the Texas Media Empowerment Project, is working with the Esperanza Center to develop their own media content monitoring tools.
The first monitoring form that we just got done designing with the community actually has 5 radio stations on it, and it will record and document the voices on the radio as well as advertisers and several other things. But the tool itself can be used for any radio station. And in a month or so, we'll be adapting that same tool to be used for television. But what has happened is that, as usual, a certain local radio station that is owned by Clear Channel strategically on air for a very long time attacked the Esperanza Peace and Justice Center.
Esperanza members are hoping their monitoring survey will force the FCC to hold Clear Channel accountable. No matter what happens in the future, Esperanza members will continue their struggle to make San Antonio a city where everyone feels welcome. For Making Contact, I'm Grace Turner.
We now leave you with this song performed by satirical bluegrass group, the Austin Lounge Lizards. It's called The Tower.
I was rolling down the highway trying to find a decent station, scanning up and down through all the format variations. Anguished Artist 103 was sensitive and bland. Wrinkled Hippie 96 was playing Cowgirl in the Sand. The bridge, the edge, the hat, the sound of all the same, of course, cause they were emanating from one giant central source.
It was the Tower, big media power, beaming down from heaven every minute, every hour. Pervasive and insistent, abandon your resistance to the Tower.
Got back home, sat in my chair and turned on my TV. Two Suits reviewed a movie from the parent company. The woman said she loved it, the man thought it was great. The DVD would come out soon and they could hardly wait. They kindly thanked each other for this frank exchange of views. Then it was back to fake reality and infotainment news.
It was the Tower, big media power, beaming down from heaven every minute, every hour. Invasive and persistent, abandon your resistance to the Tower.
The Tower is a trademark of the Babbel Corporation,
which acquired Hubris Publishing for market integration.
Owned by InfoWebNet Systems, a food co company,
a member of the Alpha Mega corporate family.
I dreamed I was surfing from one website to another, following my bliss with all my sisters and my brothers. There were gardens full of flowers, the grass was warm and green,
till a monolithic shadow cast a chill across the sea.
We must restrict your access in the name of liberty.
But then a billion bloggers made it crash into the sea.
It was the Tower.
Commercial free rock right after these messages.
Big media power.
Classic country hits from the 80s, 90s, and today.
Beaming down from heaven.
The music of your life.
24/7.
Mas musica brimstone.
It was the Tower.
Today, a small group of activists.
Big media power.
This morning, a minuscule cadre of radical extremists.
Beaming down from heaven.
An active band of extremely friendly.
That's it for this edition of Making Contact.
Special thanks to Dan Turner, Ronald Rucker, Yasuyu Nagata, and Jessica Sheldon. Our theme music is by the Charlie Hunter Trio.
Making Contact is an independent production funded primarily by generous gifts from people in the community. We are committed to providing a unique forum for voices and opinions not often heard in the mass media. If you'd like to support our work, or if you have ideas for future programs, we'd love to hear from you. For a cassette or CD copy of program number 5205, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736. You can also visit our website at radioproject.org. Lisa Rudman is our executive director, Justin Beck, associate producer, Dorian Taylor, communications manager, Esther Mania, outreach coordinator, Tom Evans, development associate, and Megan Kaiser, production intern. I'm Tina Rubio.
And I'm Emily Polk.
Thanks for listening to Making Contact.